Radio MD. RadioMD.com.
As a cardiologist and a chef, Dr. Michael Fenster has combined his culinary talents with cutting-edge medical expertise and insight. It's time for Code Delicious with Dr. Mike.
Hello, Food Nation, Healthy Nation. Are you ready for the scrumptious and the salubrious all wrapped up into one tasty treat? I know you are. And I know you know. That means it's time once again for another Code Delicious. I am Dr. Mike, and today's diagnosis, the myth of nutrition. Anthony Bourdain once remarked that good food leads to good sex, as it should. And as the sage of the city so sublimely observed, good eats can ultimately culminate in good treats. But why is that? We have to eat. We must ingest certain quantities of various nutritional components in order to survive. Indeed, it seems we are inundated with endless guidelines and volatile recommendations that seem to change daily, if not more often. These sterile edicts are issued from ivory towers and governmental strongholds. For our own health and well-being, we are told to labor under a Spartan regimen. And truth be told, from an emotionally sanitized perspective, this is true. We could exist with a palette of flavors, tastes, and textures that were more abundant and mundane. But we don't. Instead, we choose an existence in which we live to eat. And that is one of the myths of nutrition. We don't eat for nutrition's sake, and probably have not since the very first chefs fired up some mammoth burgers around an ancient campfire. We are the only animals that cook. Like an upgrade to first class, there was no going back behind the curtain after that first bite. As we evolved into the current version of Homo sapiens, we developed unique attributes that separated us from the remainder of the animal kingdom. We developed art and music, pondered philosophy and the meaning of our own existence, and pushed boundaries of internal and external exploration. The food experience is quite truly one of the uniquely human endeavors. It is uniquely human because it is so profoundly social. A meal is an encounter that almost always has been, and likely will continue to be, a shared affair. To satisfy the survival of the species, sexual congress need only occur a few times in the course of a life, yet we hunger daily. And in satisfying those basic needs and urges, we cross forks with family, friends, and strangers. It is, all at once, intensely and deeply personal, as well as socially symbolic. In a very real sense, we are not what we eat, but we eat who we are. Members of certain religions adhere to certain food restrictions. Certain cultures have unwritten food taboos. You won't find dog or cat on the menus in London, Paris, or New York. Certain ethnicities are identified with particular flavor profiles. And all the while, there is cross-pollination, evolution, and fusion. There was a time in America when eating raw fish and rice would have been viewed with contempt. Now it is viewed with an air of social sophistication. Our pursuit of food bears no small resemblance to our pursuit of fashion. It is complete with snobbery derived from privilege and hipster smugness at the culinary equivalent of torn blue jeans, flannel shirts, and knitted caps. Good ingredients are no longer enough. The best chefs in the best restaurants in the world perform a dinner theater every evening to an unending tide of trends and changes. Very often, these trends are marketed to us under the guise of healthful, gluten-free, vegan, paleo, high-protein, low-carb, high-fiber, low-fat, dairy-free, and the list goes on and on and on. These pursuits more often reflect the following of a food fashion fad than any real serious approach to health and nutrition. We process this food experience in the same regions of the brain that are the seat of our emotions, behavior, motivation, memories, and sexual desires, the limbic system. Deep within the recesses of our primitive brain, food is linked with courtship. Consumption and carnality are inextricably intertwined into our very DNA. This link can be particularly devastating if you happen to be a praying mantis. But even if it is only the potentiality of a meal that draws us in, both men and women engage in this dance of seduction and sex. In some cultures, the cooking ability of a potential bride was more important than her virginity. Food and sex have always shared a bed, and will continue to do so as long as we remain as hardwired as we currently are. The bed they share is the palate of emotion. From an emotional perspective, good food is good sex. A refusal to acknowledge the tactile and sensuous nature of the food experience is to view the act of intercourse as a simple biological imperative. While the ascetic and Puritan approach may appeal to a select few who prefer to subsist on a monastic menu, for the masses, food is foreplay. And good food is good foreplay. A great food experience often has very little to do with the actual food produced and consumed. It has a lot more to do with the environment, the time, the place, the ambiance, the atmosphere, and most decidedly the company. Imagine some of the best meals you have ever experienced. Would it have been the same if you had consumed those identical comestibles alone in a rank cafeteria surrounded by strangers? Of course it wouldn't. In the 1950s, there were two Indian restaurants in London located off Charing Cross Road. These restaurants catered to a local population of Indian students. One restaurant was known as Agra, the other as Agra Deluxe. The food for both restaurants was identical and prepared in the same kitchen that serviced both venues. However, the atmospheres were decidedly different. Agra sported communal long tables covered with an oil cloth, recorded Indian music that blared from loudspeakers, and casual service of cheaply priced food. In contrast, Agra Deluxe was finely furnished with curtains and carpets. There was liquor available and a very fine wine list. There was gentle sitar music being played in the background, and uniformed and attentive waiters lingered behind immaculately dressed linen-covered tables. Outside of the presentation, the food was exactly the same, except at Agra Deluxe, it was four times more expensive. Yet, every student wanted to take their date to Agra Deluxe. A romantic dinner is always a good prescription for any relation. And as Anthony Bourdain so keenly observed, good food will lead to good sex, as it should. The myth of this nutrition-only approach that is hammered upon us daily is that it pretends that there is no emotional connection. Nutrition is to the food experience what the study of sound is to music. All the knowledge of sound waves and frequencies cannot achieve the simple satisfaction of a mother's lullaby. Until the science of sound incorporates the theory of music, it will never, ever be relevant to the creation of song. And even then, it must acknowledge its limitation as a part of the process and not an end unto itself. And that's a diagnosis. Make sure you head over to cardiochef.com and subscribe to the newsletter. Get all this information and recipes before the show airs each week. You are listening to Code Delicious with Dr. Mike on Radio MD.